Hi and welcome to another episode of Eerie Theories. I'm Nath.
I'm Luna.
I'm Stacey.
And I'm Tasha.
Thank you very much for joining us again. And we're going to do some weird shit for you. Some weird stuff and things.
Some weird stuff.
Stuff and things.
Speaking of weird stuff, love you to go first.
Any weird stuff?
Well, I would have said Tasha, but she's not going next.
Okay. So I'm going to start us off with some roadside tales. I'm sure most of us have heard of spooky encounters whilst driving at night. Whether you believe them or not, some stick with you.
Sounds like someone stepped on a duck. Like half a honk.
I've heard stories that range from ghostly apparitions, fumbling zombie-like people, phantom horses and strange creatures. Is it a trick of tired eyes, or are some people having some genuinely terrifying experiences? Here are some roadside encounter stories that I thought deserved a mention. I was driving with my dad back from my grandma's house, and the road you take is surrounded by woods. There's barely any houses, and generally, it's quite empty. There's a crossroad where the path splits into two. One road continues to be an asphalt, and the other road...
Are you laughing at asphalt?
Hey, you said immature. Ass.
This is meant to be a spooky story.
Right. I didn't do anything.
Hey, Tarmac, darling. We're in Britain.
I'm just reading it as it is.
I wouldn't have laughed at Tarmac.
You probably would have for some reason.
Tarmac's not funny. It's a very serious object.
You know who's got no fault with their ass?
Mothman!
He's got a lovely plum pudding.
Let me read my spooky story. Sorry. You're ruining the ambiance.
So, one road continues to be tarmac and the other road is gravel. Anyway, when we approached the crossroad, we both saw a tall hooded figure standing near the trees. He, she, it was tall with a floor-length black cloak, facing away from us. I stopped for a second, gasped, and then continued to drive past. I asked my dad if he saw it, but he dismissed it and said to keep driving, but I'll never forget the look in his eyes. So my next one is... This was 19 years ago, but I still remember clear as day. I was an assistant manager at a movie theatre a town away. On Thursday nights, I would put the new movies together, reel to reel, and screen them to make sure they were ready to view the next day. That meant I'd always be driving home around 3 to 4 a.m. One Thursday night after work, it was around 3:30-ish and I was on an empty road, or so I thought. I caught sight of a person on the side of the road walking in my direction. As I passed them, I noticed they were wearing a clown mask and carrying a baseball bat. He was completely alone, and I'm not afraid to admit it, I made it home in record time.
Tasha, your worst nightmare.
That one was creepy, because he's just an empty road, and there's just someone there with that on. Just a pick.
I felt there was a lot of them.
The other morning in our street, I thought there was an argument happening. Someone was trying to get into someone's house. So there was so much shouting, "Fuck off! Come out here, let me in, open this door." And I'm like, I can't miss the tea. So I'm up my window at 5 o'clock in the morning, and it's this random guy in the street who's shouting this. And you know when you're looking and it's like, to be fair, I bet that's so therapeutic, having a good shout in an empty street while nobody's about.
All clearly, I heard then was, "There goes the cracker that I see each morning."
That was my next point. Clearly it was drugs. But I look and I'm like, oh, go to a forest and have a good shout where... I mean, obviously I think people do that.
Go to a forest, take a bit of crack and shout at the trees.
Minus the crack, but yeah.
Have a good shout.
Go to Calic Chase and be the next cryptid.
I'm sure it was a Wednesday as well. It wasn't even like it was a Sunday morning and it was going to be like after the session. It was a weekday.
It is Wednesday, and I'm like, menu.
But then instead of doing it in Kennett Chase, something might start shouting back.
Yeah.
I'd have an argument though. What's your name?
Pigman! Fuck you, Pigman!
Do you want some plum pudding? Do you have an ass like Mothman?
Have you got any more stories for us,
though? I think so, yeah. So, a friend of my cousin was a long-haul trucker. He was making a delivery across the country, and since the road wasn't exactly peachy, he had to drive slowly. He sees another truck slowly approaching him from the opposite direction, and as he sees the truck, he notices it's the same as his. Since this isn't fairly uncommon, he didn't think much of it, but as the other one grew closer, he decided to honk in recognition of having the same kind of truck. The other replies, and it's all good. That is until they narrowly and very slowly pass one another. He turned to look at the driver and he saw himself. Not a reflection, not a similarity, but his exact copy. Same clothes, same hat, same red beard, staring right at him. They passed each other and that was that. He told me he'd seen some very weird things, but that was the moment he decided to stop being a trucker.
That was the moment he decided to stop taking drugs.
I wonder if he drove past, saw the image of himself and thought, smash.
Maybe.
Tasha would have.
Yeah, I would have been like, hey, big boy!
I'm all about that plum pudding.
Go listen to the last episode if you don't know what the plum pudding thing's about.
Maybe a bit off the mark, but still scared the crap out of me. I was heading west on the 176 here in Denver, just cruising along about 70 miles per hour. Out of nowhere, I saw a massive, almost solid cloud of what looked like to be dirt coming right at me. I'd say it was about 20 feet wide and 10 feet tall. I scanned ahead of me and couldn't see any vehicle that it could have come from. With nowhere to go, I slowed down and took the hit, hoping there wasn't anything big enough in there to come through the windshield or jack up my truck. It was pretty loud as I smashed through it. The instant I hit it, I knew it wasn't dirt. I immediately hit the washers because I couldn't see a damn thing through all the carnage. My windshield was painted with guts. It turns out it was bees. Freaking huge bees that sounded like rockets when they hit. I can't even imagine seeing the swarm if I was walking. They would kill the crap out of anything in their path. Could you imagine that? Thinking it's just a dust cloud. This is my last one now. My dad has told me this story a few times, and each time it kind of weirds me out. He was in the military at the time, and him and his buddy were out getting food. About halfway into their drive down a dark road, my dad and his buddy noticed a woman in a red dress and black hair walking. They found it odd because it didn't seem very safe and it wasn't very warm out. My dad said that he knew deep down stopping was a bad idea, but they slowed right down to get a glance to see if she needed any help. As they got to her, they both swear that she had no face. Instead, there was a black hole as if she'd been in a wreck and her face was taken clean off. It freaked them out, so they floored it and didn't stop until they got to the diner they were heading for. They found out while they were talking to people in there that a woman had been killed earlier that year on that road in a car accident. And apparently the sightings of her were very common in that area.
Fuck that.
Now, I know this wasn't exactly a theory, but I listened to so many of these creepy stories and noticed there's so many of people on the roads. Ghostly people, clowns, and roadside killers. And what one gives you the creeps the most?
I'm not so much ghosts. Because, like, they might not necessarily be a real story. But the stories of real people standing there with a knife or a baseball bat or in a clown costume or, as we were discussing earlier, the people that, like, leave like a baby's car seat at the side of the road. So you stop and then they try and mug you or something. People scare me more than the paranormal.
I actually
does.
Saw a video earlier while I was looking for like different stories and stuff. There was a video of someone just filming. He was driving in the night down this like country road and he was like, I've had to pull over here. I'm not getting out. My doors are locked, but there is a fucking pushchair over there. And you could see the only thing lighting the pushchair up was his headlights, but it was facing the other way.
If that was the case, I'd phone the police.
That's what the police have said to do.
You get the all the videos we've seen where they're driving, you just hear someone screaming in like the bushes as if they're screaming for help, and you're like, no, I'm not getting out of my car in the middle of fucking nowhere.
They just call the police, notify where you were when you heard it, send them there.
I think my biggest fear is my car being approached when there's nobody around, by somebody who genuinely needs help, because what do you do? It's you and that person. You don't know who else is hiding out there. Please let me in. Someone's chasing me. You've got to help me, because if you were in that position, you'd want the driver to
open the door.
And
if you were alone as well.
Yeah. But if, you, if you're a driver on your own and someone's doing that, you're going to be like...
You don't want to let in the person that's now the person chasing you.
Yeah. It's scary. Mm. Have any of you guys ever had experiences while you've been in your car of weird stuff that you've seen?
Once actually, and I don't know whether it was weird because I literally was like, fuck that, and just drove off. It was actually driving back from here, and you know that horrible like pitch black road that you can cut through?
The one over there?
Yeah, the one like not far from here. I was cutting through that, and there was a car like parked in the bushes, and it looked like it had like crashed, but like recently. And like part of me was like, ah, let me quickly pull over. But then the other part of me was like, actually, that doesn't look like it's been crashed. It looks like it's been dumped in the bushes. Yeah. And I was like, ha, no.
Yeah, best not.
The one we mentioned the other day, we had to take a detour. We were trying to go to Asda, and the road we normally took had roadworks. So we took a different route. There was roadworks. So we took a different route. And as we were going through this housing estate, a guy basically almost got in the road.
He was waving his hands.
Waving his hands, trying to make us stop. And he was just a random guy that was just sort of like leaning up a street sign until he saw our car and then tried to flag us down and make us stop.
I wouldn't let him go to Asda then.
Obviously, I didn't stop because we could kind of see him for a few seconds before we started doing that. And he didn't look like he was in any distress. It didn't look like he was in an emergency. He just suddenly decided, I'm going to stop that car. But she was like, something is trying to stop us going to Asda.
And you know how close Asda is from here?
Yeah.
To have that many things stop you.
Yeah, we're either going to be in a crash or something's going to happen to us if we go there. So we went somewhere else. Because it just sort of made us think.
That was really weird when that guy stepped out and was trying to stop us. It was really, really weird. Remember when we interrupted that guy having his whatever he was doing in the car, and he got all pissed off when we pulled in?
Gosh, yeah, looking for the ghostly monks of Sandwell Valley. Yeah.
We pulled up. Stacey,
we pulled up to the dog and sesh. I thought that was a canic chase thing.
Yeah, there was a car park full of cars, all with their like windows steamed up, and like we pulled up, and because obviously as a park, my headlights were still on.
Yeah.
The guy and his lady friend. We're all like, oh, fuck's sake, and drove off.
He properly looked
stropping.
At us.
I'm sure.
And was all, ah, oh, like this at us. What did we do?
He put his windows down, didn't he? And our windows were up, and he shouted something out the window. Yeah. And I was like, I don't like it here. I didn't come for this.
We accidentally flashed our lights on his little dark party he was having in the car park. We ruined his tone. And then we left anyway, so we didn't even get out the car there.
No.
Ruined his time.
We once accidentally came across a dog aside, but they were really nice. So they were actually very considerate. I'll give them credit. So we'd gone to this particular part in the town we used to live in, and it basically looked over the motorway, and Luke wanted a picture of the sun setting. I remember you telling me about this, actually. And he had this particular image in mind, and as we're walking back to the car, Luke's got his tripod, he's got his camera bag, and I'm there. And this guy starts talking to us. He's like, hi, how are you? And we're like, yeah, I'm okay, thanks, how are you? And I'm like, I've got keys between my knuckles, I'm ready. Like, Luke won't do anything. I'm ready to beat a man with a tripod. And he's like, oh, were you guys getting photos and things like that? And then Luke, bless him, innocent as anything, is like, yeah, I was getting this photo, and he's describing the photo and everything like that. Mm. And the guy's like, oh, that sounds really nice. And he was like, you're heading off now before it gets dark and things like that. And then Luke was like, yeah, we're just going now. And then the guy sits by his car waiting for us to go, and he's like, bye. And then we saw all the other cars, and we were like, and then as we're driving away, you see him look at one of the other cars. So they waited for us to go before they got started.
It was like, the first, obviously, we went to two of our Bufog uprising Skywatches at Cannon Chase.
And every time.
Full of doggers.
Yep.
But the first Bufog Skywatch I ever went to was at Cannon Chase. And they did it literally on a hill in the bushes somewhere. Like, really indescript location. So I asked Dave, where are we meeting at? It was like, just look for some cars parked in a lay-by. Right, Kennet Chase is a big fucking area full of country lanes and lay-bys full of cars.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, I'm assuming I'm just going to find it. So we drove around in circles, we went to the wrong car park, we got out and wandered through a bit of Kennet Chase, found no one, got back in the car, drove around a bit more, and I found a lay-by full of cars. But cool, I finally found it. Turned out it was a different kind of meeting, and they weren't there to see UFOs, they were there to see titties. I was like, oops, shit, back of the car. So we almost accidentally joined a group of doggers.
It's always bloody doggers. Like, no offence, you do what you want to do.
We don't kink shame here. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Anywho.
I didn't realise it was so popular.
I think we figured out from that discussion that it's not the spirits and the dead people that are the problem.
Yeah.
It is the living.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited for my drive home now.
I did realise that.
Yeah, she said when she was doing it, she was like, I'm going to try and make this as spooky as possible because both Stacey and Tasha are going to drive home.
You go drive home now.
Thanks.
So, yeah, moving on. For this show, I wanted to talk about something that I was under the impression as a kid that I was going to have to worry about much more often when I grew up than was really the case. There was always things like quicksand, the Bermuda Triangle, having to stop, drop and roll because I was on fire. All of these things that were in TV shows and mentions in books so much, I assumed they were going to be an almost daily occurrence. But obviously, they weren't. But I just assumed it was things I'd just avoid. You know, don't go near quicksand. Don't go near flames. Don't go to Bermuda. But the one that worried me the most, because it was something I didn't think I could avoid, was the one that I wanted to discuss. So let's start with one of the many examples. Dr. John Irving Bentley, who was known as J. Irving, lived a normal life, and had it not been for his manner of death, he would probably have been forgotten entirely. He was a family doctor who served from 1925 to 1953. A few years after he retired, on December 5th, 1966, Don Gosnell, a meter reader for the North Penn Gas Company, entered the house of Dr. Bentley and noticed a strange smell and a light blue smoke that lingered in the basement. Curious, Gosnell went to investigate and was shocked by what he discovered. The doctor, who had been seen alive by friends at 9 o'clock the night before, was dead. All that remained of Dr. Bentley was his lower leg with the slipper still on his foot and the walker he used to get around. The rest of the doctor was a pile of ash. As mentioned in one of our Forgotten Unsolved episodes, human bones remain even after bodies are burnt at 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, or 1,090 degrees Celsius, for 2 hours. To have left nothing but a pile of ash, you have to imagine the fire was hotter and burned for longer. But there was no other damage to the house, other than the floor that was directly beneath him. And there was also no evidence of a source of ignition. It would appear that Dr. Bentley's death was a prime example of spontaneous human combustion. There have been over 200 reported cases of spontaneous human combustion in the last 300 years. In some cases, it is even added as the official cause of death after an autopsy.
I think that's mad.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask how you do an autopsy on a body that is spontaneously combusting?
Not every person has burnt to ash. Some people have burnt partially.
Generally, you don't get.
But
to,
still,
if you look, get cremated, they have to crush it.
Anyway. Yeah, there's still bones left.
Yeah.
In some of them, there have been. I will touch on this in a minute. There have been some small fragments of bone left.
Mm.
But generally, you'd have to get so hot for your bones to burn as well. That it's just mind-blowing. While the cases do differ slightly, they all have a few main things in common. No source of external ignition can be found, or evidence of there being one that have then been burnt up. The people involved have been left as nothing but a pile of ash in most of the cases, with maybe a few small bone fragments left over, with little or no damage to their homes, or in some cases, even the chairs they were sitting on were hardly scorched, and most of the victims seem to have been alive when this happened to them. Some witnesses reported that a ball of blue flame jumped from the abdomen of their loved ones while they were going about their day.
So some people have witnessed this happen.
Yeah. Again, the people that do the autopsies and people that investigate were like, no, that didn't happen. But they're like, dude, I know what I saw.
That's a bit more than heartburn, isn't it? Flames coming from your mouth, like, crazy.
So, strangely, I don't think this was necessarily noted in any of the research, but I kind of picked up on it. It all seemed to have happened indoors. So, as another example, late night on Christmas Eve 1885 in the small farming town of Seneca, Illinois, a woman named Matilda Rooney was alone in her kitchen when she suddenly burst into flames. The fire quickly incinerated her entire body except her feet. The incident also claimed the life of her husband, Patrick, who was found suffocated from the fumes in another room of the house. The tragedy left investigators baffled. There was no reason to suspect foul play. The Rooneys had been relaxing and drinking whiskey that evening. This is another thing I don't think I mentioned in my research, but a lot of the early accounts of spontaneous human combustion were blamed on alcohol in the body, but that didn't stand up to any kind of scrutiny and tests later on. A farmhand who had spent a few hours with them hadn't noticed anything out of the ordinary. Furthermore, no source of ignition could be found for the blaze, although the flames had been intense enough to reduce Matilda Rooney to ashes and a few fragments of bone, they had not spread to the rest of the room. The fire seemed to have started in her body and stayed confined to her body. So what could cause a person who was perfectly fine 1 minute to burn to a pile of ash very quickly? The official scientific stance on this phenomenon is that it is not real and there has to be an external ignition source and that it has to have been just lost in the fire. Smoking and indoor fires have been blamed as the most likely ignition sources, with low mobility and or obesity being the reason given for the victims being unable to get up and do something about the fire.
Oh yeah, stop, drop and roll.
Yeah. Others would argue that clothing being set on fire by a dropped cigarette would not burn hot enough to turn someone to ash.
I've dropped cigarettes on myself and gone, ah, and it fell on the floor.
Yeah. However, when it came to Dr. Bentley, Deputy Coroner John Deck, in his official report, stated that this was the official cause of death. Dr. Bentley accidentally set himself on fire due to ashes falling on his robe from his pipe. The belief is that ash fell from his pipe, setting him on fire, and he attempted to get to the bathroom to put it out, but fell and was burnt to death while he lay on the floor. But if I remember rightly, the bathroom he was in the bath, was his slightly burned robe. So he took off the robe that got a bit burnt, lay on the floor, and he was then on fire and the robe wasn't, and burnt to a pile of ash, other than his leg.
There's got to be something to it if they're turning to fucking ash and nothing around them's being caught on fire.
So, obviously, there's a lot going on here. So, believers of the phenomenon offer a few of their own explanations. There's the wick theory. This theory does not really explain how the person catches fire, but attempts to explain why they burn up quickly. The theory suggests that the fat in the human body acts as a wick that causes the fire to spread and quickly destroy the human body. Think of the human as a candle, with body fat being the flammable substance. Once all the fat is gone, the fire puts itself out. So they'd still need the ignition, hence maybe dropping the cigarette or dropping the thing from the pipe, but then the body fat catches on fire and burns and burns and burns. To test this theory, research biologist Professor Brian J. Ford marinated abdominal tissue from pigs in acetone, a highly flammable substance which the body produces in reaction to alcoholism, fat-free dieting, and diabetes.
Diabetes.
I never knew the body produced acetone.
Mm. Now you do. This was used to make scale models of humans, which were then clothed and set alight, and they burned to ash within half an hour. Mm. So he went on to say, for the first time, a feasible cause of human combustion has been experimentally demonstrated, but still this theory is not accepted by the scientific community and would also still need a source of ignition to be added, which not all of them had.
How do you set your body fat on fire? Even if you dropped a fag on yourself, you've still got clothes, skin, hair. Yeah, how's it going through everything instantly and literally going up in flames?
Mm-hmm. It's just weird. There's the lightning theory. Some believe these unfortunate people were struck by a bolt of lightning.
Or in the house?
In his basement.
Or that ball lightning had been to blame. And there are cases people claim that ball lightning is coming through their windows or through their doors and moved around.
Climbing in your windows.
Unfortunately, there is still no definitive proof that ball lightning either even exists. And in cases such as Dr. Bentley, there were no storms in the area, no reason for ball lightning or any form of lightning. There's the methane theory. This theory states that spontaneous human combustion is caused by a build-up of methane in the stomach and intestines.
Oh, I
don't
let it build up.
Oh, yeah, don't hold your farts in.
Yeah. anyone see that episode of South Park where everyone was spontaneously combusting because they were holding in their farts? That literally happened in an episode of South Park. Trust me. Moving on. When the amount of methane gets to a critical level, it reacts with enzymes in the body and explodes, setting the person on fire. If this were true, however, why doesn't this happen in cows, which produce much more methane than humans do? We don't get many cows just setting themselves on fire.
Do you remember seeing a burning cow in a fire?
I know, yeah. This is the part of the sceptical argument of why scientists don't believe in spontaneous combustion. Why don't you see people sitting in Starbucks just accidentally setting on fire?
Would have happened again recently. It hasn't.
Why doesn't it happen very often? Like, it must be. If it is a natural thing that actually happens, it has to be a very, very, very niche thing.
I wonder if it's static electricity, because it's still a form of electricity.
But even static, you could kind of like, you get that little jolt and you go, that's not enough. I mean, it could be the spark, but you'd have to be like covered in petrol or something for that to ignite it.
But then if your body's produced acetone,
it's
very strange.
So, there are some more out there theories, should we say. For several of the cases, including that of Dr. Bentley, UFOs had been seen in the area in the days leading up to the death.
I'm not saying
could it
it's
have
aliens.
Something to do with aliens?
But it's aliens.
In a 1995 book called Ablaze, written by Larry E. Arnold, he proposed a new subatomic particle, which he called a pyrotron. He insisted this could explain the phenomenon. Obviously, never been proven by anybody. He just fucking made it up in a book. In another book, this time from 1976, called Fire from Heaven, UK writer Michael Harrison suggested that spontaneous human combustion is connected to poltergeist activity because he argued the force which activates the poltergeist originates in and is supplied by a human being. So that force could set you on fire, apparently. All we do know is that science doesn't back up many, if not all, of the explanations for spontaneous human combustion. And believers, on the other hand, don't buy into the scientific explanations, which leave questions such as how bones are turned to ash so quickly, without damaging more of the area around the bodies. And while there are over 200 cases that still don't have a definitive answer, I thought I'd bring it to you guys to see what you all think is really happening.
I think that the Grim Reaper woke up that morning and thought, I feel spicy today.
He just chose chaos. So
he chose more violence than usual. I don't know.
I have no idea.
I think they just smelt one of their farts.
I really thought that I was going to look into this and go, okay, none of it actually happened. Someone died in a house fire and people went, no, it was spontaneous combustion. But like,
and it actually goes down as a cause of death on like the autopsy actual report.
People doing, I think that one was in Ireland. The coroner wrote it as cause of death, spontaneous human combustion, because there was no evidence of a source of ignition and the fire seemed like it came from inside the body.
What's getting me is the stories and the evidence of it seem to be there. The how and the why, none of it adds up.
Yeah. Not one explanation makes sense. I'm with the science people. None of what they said makes sense. It doesn't hold up. Doesn't make sense.
No.
But scientists going, it must have just been, he was smoking and his clothes set on fire. That happens to lots of people. You know when they tell you don't fall asleep smoking?
Mm.
That's what they said. All elderly people, maybe they had a heart attack while they were smoking and that's what set them on fire. Okay, then why did the sofa they were on not burn down? Why did their house not burn down? Why didn't they just get a bit burnt and then it went out?
Yeah.
How did it set them on fire so hot that their bones turned to ash and yet it didn't damage anything else?
That indicates to me that it's something that's happening, I mean, obviously, from the inside out.
Yeah, it's an internal thing.
So it's got to be some sort of chemical reaction that happens that fast and burns that hot that it doesn't have the time to affect anything else.
Yeah, by the time it gets out of the body, it's almost finished the reaction and it doesn't do anything.
It would
have
to be a very, very specific,
it would be a very niche mixture of whatever it is.
Chemicals and gases.
Because it's not happening to everybody. It could be down to someone's diet. It could be down to, because obviously it said a lot of the time it's elderly people. It's people that suffer with obesity. It's people that have both. Maybe it is a diet thing. Maybe it's a lifestyle thing. And at just the right temperature, just the right whatever the conditions need to be, sometimes they're just right and it happens.
And I suppose it doesn't happen often enough for any research to be really done into it.
And the worst thing about it is, if it happens on the inside, the only evidence to explain what happened was the body, which has been turned to ash. There's no evidence left to look into to explain how it works.
Mm.
But yeah, I have no fucking clue.
Yep.
Very crazy. Weird.
Very weird.
Speaking of really weird, Tasha.
Smooth. Always. So, today actually, I thought I would talk about a place that I do find very interesting, but I also have very mixed feelings on. And that is the London History Museum. And obviously, I feel like I probably don't need to tell you this, it is apparently haunted as shit.
Tis indeed.
I mean, I suppose that's what happens when you take people's literal grave sites and put them on display.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hence the mixed feelings. I love a museum, I just don't like what they did to the Egyptians.
You know what they say? The pyramids are only still there because it wouldn't fit in the British Museum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, obviously, because of the amount of remains, and obviously these, in my opinion, desecrated remains that have been just picked out of their home country and dumped in a British Museum, there's some pretty, you know, not very happy ghosts. So these are just a couple of the stories of some of the hauntings that have happened there. So the first one I'm going to talk about is a gentleman called Phil Heary. He worked at the museum for almost 30 years as a guide. And he basically knew the place like the back of his hands. Like, you know, he was really comfortable walking around there. You know, works for somewhere that long, you're going to be pretty happy there. But every time he went to the Egyptian gallery, he would always feel really like uncomfortable, on edge. It would get super cold. And then there was one instance where King Charles was there, and then the then Egyptian president and they basically were going to come to this museum, so he had to prep it and make sure it looked good and presentable and everything like that. And he basically recalls that the room got cold and it was pretty standard, but at this point it got so cold that he could see his breath. Like, wow. It got that dramatically cold out of nowhere. And obviously, given the age of the artifacts, they do have to keep it to a pretty like stable temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it got really cold, and then there was this foul smell as well, which is really weird given it's cold. Like, it was apparently so bad it made him feel physically sick. But then he gets another colleague to come in, like nothing happened. Literally just completely stops happening.
For the fact that they have to keep it at certain temperatures, there's actually one tomb that you can go to in Egypt. I think they only allow a certain amount of people a day. You're only allowed in there for 15 minutes, and that's it.
Yeah.
Because all of the paint and stuff eroded away on all of the paintings on the wall inside this tomb. So they had to completely close it, repaint it all, basically. Coat it all in stuff that would kind of protect it. But still, the amount of moisture from the fact it's hot and there's people in there breathing, all of that moisture is still eroding the paint and damaging the place. So they have to limit how many people go in to keep the temperature at a certain amount and the humidity at a certain level.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, they have to do that.
So that situation, though, was literally by no means a one-off. So over the years, there's been loads of, like, you know, visitors and things that have reported, like full-bodied apparitions. There was, you know, obviously temperature drops. Staff have also reported doors randomly opening and closing. They've apparently also reported music randomly playing as well. Like, you know, obviously there's a general PA system, but they don't play music in there normally. But apparently there'd be music randomly playing.
Did you play some smooth jazz?
And then alarms also going off for no reason as well. And then there was one instance where they had a temporary display in. And they obviously had a security guard that was keeping on this temporary display. And he was looking at the camera towards the stairwell. And I'm pretty sure it's the big stairwell that goes up the middle for anyone that's ever been there. And he looks there and he sees these like massive white glowing lights. And he just watches them for a bit. And they just hover around above the floor and then fling off. There could be a bug, could be anything. So obviously, I thought I'd mention it, but I personally think I have a camera at home, and if I have a moth or something like that, it shows up as a big white ball of light. So.
Or the last thing you got tricked by.
Hi, Viz.
Yeah, the reflective bit of Luke's trousers.
I know, I didn't realise they were there and then had to go double check, and I was like, ah, that was what it was. But it could have been high vis as well, but you know, you never know. I mean, I'd be surprised if they had a clothes horse in the middle of the museum.
Yeah.
Before you mentioned the balls of light, I was just like thinking, this is night at the museum, isn't it?
Basically.
Yeah.
It's reminded me of that. All the little people running around and stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's all coming alive at night time.
Spicy, I know.
Night time. Daytime.
Night time. Daytime.
What are you doing? Have a game of nighttime, daytime. Okay.
So there has been other situations as well. In, obviously, 2014, there was that instance. That's as recently as then. And then there was one Dutch couple that were just visitors. And apparently they saw, and this is in their words, a dwarf girl in the reflection of a display case. So then they obviously turned around being like, oh, you know, do we need to move? Because obviously this is a little kid. And I don't want to get in her way. They obviously turned around straight away, as you would if you see a reflection of a kid. Nobody there.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another visitor noticed a strange golden light in the lap of an Egyptian statue. So, you know, like the ones where it's usually like Anubis, where it's just sat on the throne. But apparently on the lap of it, there was like a weird golden light. But I'm guessing to them, it didn't really make any sense. So it was quite noteworthy. And then this one's actually pretty dark. Soz, guys. Apparently someone else, I'm going to try and find this photo as well, so, you know, take this as 50-50 for now, but apparently someone else captured a photo of what they thought was a mummified Mexican baby boy hovering in midair.
Ooh.
I know.
Question.
Okay.
If it's mummified, how did they know it was Mexican?
I know, yeah.
Was it wearing a sombrero?
How did they know it was a boy?
Yeah.
Or just a bit odd.
Oh, no, yeah, it's obviously either specific, so I'm going to try and find that photo.
It's either a Mexican boy, as you can see, or it's a mummy. Or unless it was the Mexican mummies and it was just made of cake.
Maybe.
Hashtag is it cake?
Maybe it could have been cake.
Cake Middleton.
There was another instance as well. So this is in apparently 2004. An overnight security guard was patrolling one of the rooms. So it was like it was items from an Anglo-Saxon burial mound. And he apparently tried to close the door, but it was like someone was holding them. They just would not shut for anything. Like, nothing was letting them shut. It was like someone was pushing the door. So obviously, logical brain kicks in. He's like, oh, maybe there's a latch or something like that. So he goes round and checks the door. No, there's no latch. There's nothing like that. They just wouldn't close. Yes. So apparently he got really annoyed, gave him a real push as well, because he was like, what the hell? And then what he did after a while, he felt like someone's wrist come out from the two doors, almost like someone was holding it, and then went, ha-ha! And then suddenly he could slam it closed. I mean, that could also be like a dodgy hinge or something like that, like logical brain kicks
or
in.
Or something got stuck under the door or something like
could
that.
Could be like a loose hinge, and then as he's been pulling it to try and get it closed.
The hinge dropped.
A hinge dropped or something. So logical side on that one, but, you know, it's still really cool. There was another instance where someone was trying to push a door, and apparently they felt a wrist come out of the doors, caught him in his sternum, and knocked him a metre or so onto his backside. So, like, pushed him, just yeeted him. He was like, yeet.
Oh, no, we're not that.
Someone doesn't like those doors closed.
I don't know, yeah. There's been a couple of other ones. This one's actually kind of funny. Two of the museum's curators reported being struck on the forehead by a flying pebble. Like, I respect the aim.
Do you reckon it was one of those penguin prostitutes? Like, take the fucking pebble, bitch.
Probably, yeah.
Maybe.
There was also another story about a female overnight guard who's patrolling the storage rooms in the basements, like turning the lights on and off as like she went to check each individual room, and then one of the lights went out on their own accord. So she was just like, nope. And then she said, apparently it felt like someone was standing behind me. I felt them reach into my body and grab me by the spine.
What?
Yeah, oh no. I like, how does one describe that? Like, how would you even know what that feels like?
That's specific.
And then apparently though, she told one of the male store workers, and apparently he went, oh no, that's a load of rubbish and things like that. You know, you must have imagined it. Apparently the exact same thing happened to him.
Good.
Yeah. I know, yeah. Like, you're downplaying what a woman has said here. And then, yeah, that's pretty much the main stories of it, and that's what a lot of people hear. I'm hoping I'll be able to go there tomorrow anyway, so I'll let you know if I see any ghoulies, and I'm going to try and find that photo.
Very nice. I think generally, anywhere, especially after the thing we've talked about before, the whole curses and things to do with mummies, the second those stories ran out, everywhere that has a mummy, there's a story of it being haunted. But I really don't think that... There's one in the museum in Birmingham. An Egyptian mummy should be in Egypt, not Birmingham. Yeah. Why the fuck can I go around the corner and see a real Egyptian mummy?
Yeah, I mean, fair enough if it's touring and they've, like, had it in the museum. Like, he's here for a month, come see it.
They do take it in and out, but when it's not in the museum, they put it in storage. It's just sitting in a fucking box.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'd be like, imagine if we were to, like, take Henry VIII's corpse and start parading him around. Like, we wouldn't do that, so why do we think it's acceptable? Yeah. And that's why I'm a bit mixed feelings on the museums. So
If they were to be put in a museum for people to see, I'm fine with that, because people want to learn about history, but it should be in a museum in Egypt. You want to learn about Egypt, you go to fucking Egypt.
Yeah.
Like, we could have part of the museum that shows things, but you don't have to have the physical artifacts that you've stolen. You can get things on loan. We've got it for 6 months, come and have a look before we have to send it back.
Yeah.
Like, the Egyptians haven't made any money out of all their fucking stuff or their history, because we robbed it.
Yeah, and I just don't like the idea as well. It's like, for instance, obviously a lot of like these mummies were pharaohs. They were, you know, like royalty or high-powered people of Egypt. And it's just like, they're going to be proud of where they were from. And you've just gone, okay, let me take you out of that place.
Yeah, and they were proud to be buried in a tomb with all of their worldly possessions forever. And we're like, nah, fuck your worldly possessions. We've split them up amongst, like, 72 countries, and now you're sitting in Plymouth.
Yeah.
Like, fucking why? It's stupid.
My main issue is, it's human remains.
Yeah, that's the long and short of it.
Can get prosecuted for not looking after human remains properly, why are they allowed to literally put it on display for people to go and look at?
After 300 years, you're allowed to be dug up from your grave and disposed of.
If you did that to some random person in the UK and plonked them in a museum, people would be like, dude, what the fuck?
I couldn't do that. Like, I couldn't just dig up a grave and be like, that's over 300 years old.
No, but you know what I mean? Why are they allowed to do that?
You couldn't just walk up to the museum and be like, I found a skeleton, do you want it?
It goes back to this whole, a bit like with the Shane Dawson thing, something that was acceptable years and years and years ago, but for different people it's like, oh, well, we wouldn't do it now, but because it was so long ago, you know?
Yeah.
I must say, it also reminds me, this conversation, she's just popped in my head. You know when they've got those videos on TikTok and it's of somebody who's like messing with something in the woods and she's like, Bamba Gluts!
Yeah, put it back.
Yeah,
put it back.
Yeah.
I want a blessed 2024. I love her so much.
You know what? You know, I think, just to make it even for Egypt, I think we should dig up Henry VIII and display him in Egypt. I think it's only fair, really.
Yeah.
Dig him up.
We'll send him some, like, British history, so like,
I don't know, Canastella.
We haven't got a lot left. Send him a bag of chips, you know.
I was about to say Greg's
fish and chips, Greg's sausage roll. To be fair, I wouldn't be surprised if Greg's popped up inside one of the pyramids.
Yeah,
there's Greg's everywhere.
There are, yeah.
Pharaoh Greg. Anyway, Stace, what have you got for us?
So today I'm going to tell you the story of a young boy named Roland Doe. A child who was no stranger to the paranormal parts of life. One day, back in the 1940s, his aunt asked him what he wanted for his birthday, and of course, as any child would want, he asked for a Ouija board.
Of course.
Of course.
Why wouldn't you?
Now, most parents would scoff at this. However, Harriet isn't a regular aunt. She's a cool aunt and gets him what he wants for his birthday.
That sounds like something I do.
Yeah. To be fair. So all seemed well. That was until his aunt's death and Roland starts to experience creepy abnormalities within his home, such as rattling on the walls, strange noises and flying objects. Suspecting that this paranormal activity is down to the death of Auntie Harriet, Roland's family decide to use the Ouija board to contact his aunt and ask her ever so nicely if she could stop fucking around. However, this just made things worse for Roland. He ended up with scratches all over his body and all over his bed where he slept. After this, the family decided to baptise Roland. You know, damage control.
Jesus will fix it.
Which sent Roland...
That sounded a bit too much like Jim will fix it.
Oh, dear. No, that's...
Jesus fixed it for you, sir.
Anyway, this baptism sent Roland into a blind rage and made the now suspected possession worse. So Roland's family went down the logical route after this, contacting many experts, including a psychiatrist, and were still left with no answers, no solution, and no clue what was happening to their son. They eventually sought the help from Father J. Bishop, where multiple exorcisms were performed. Many of Roland's exorcisms were stopped prematurely because Roland posed a risk to those around him. He spoke in Latin, vomited, urinated, spit, and spoke in a deep, unfamiliar voice.
Same.
Mood. It is said that during one of the exorcisms, he ripped off mattress springs and hurled them at the priest.
Mood.
Wow.
A few days after one of his exorcisms, Roland started to get red scratches on his body, spelling out the word Louis, so that's L-O-U-I-S, which prompted the family to go and visit St. Louis University, where they were introduced to Father Walter H. Halloran, I think that says, and Reverend William Bowden, who performed another exorcism on Roland. When Bowden left a crucifix under Roland's pillow, everyone in the room witnessed the furniture flip over and Roland's bed shook so uncontrollably that the crucifix was pushed to the end of the bed. Roland received many exorcisms at many different locations, including at home, Georgetown University Hospital, and the Alexian Brothers Hospital. His final exorcism, the successful one, was performed with the help of priests Walter Halloran and William Van Roo. Halloran ended up getting his nose broken at some point in the last ritual, although the evidence doesn't really say how this happened, but apparently it happened. There's been so much speculation since then of what happened to Roland Doe. Once his exorcism was successfully completed, speculation says that the real Roland Doe was actually a guy called Roland Hunkler, a former NASA engineer who helped with the 1969 moon landing, who sadly passed away in 2020. Now, I'd like to think that this theory is true, as it would be lovely to think that a child with such a traumatic experience went off to live such a successful life. Regardless of this, the story of Roland Doe went on to inspire a novel and one of the biggest classic horror films of all time, The Exorcist. I thought that was interesting.
Even named a Reagan.
I know. It's mad. I'd love to think that the Exorcist kid went on to work for NASA, because how cool would that be?
That would be pretty cool.
That's how they got the demon into space. Fucked him off on a rocket.
But you're someone else's problem now.
I wonder if that's why there were so many failed attempts at the moon landing.
On to some two-sentence horror stories. Do you want to go first then?
Okay. Do it, I whispered. I love working on the suicide hotline.
Jesus. Trigger warning. Finding the biggest spider you've ever seen in your bed isn't the worst thing that could happen. Losing it is.
Yep.
Yeah, too right.
Yeah, yep.
I would never sleep again. Fuck Freddy Krueger. Spiders.
I said I would babysit my niece. That was before I met Stacey, her imaginary friend.
I'm not real.
No, she isn't. She's just a figment of our imaginations and it's just Nate putting an accent on.
Nate's actually really good at female voices.
Exactly. Tasha's just sitting there going smash and I'm just putting the voice on.
So, keeping it with the spider theme, I screamed and ran out of my room yelling, Dad, I saw a huge spider. Can you come and kill it? I hope the man under my bed didn't realise I'd seen him or that I was home alone.
Oh.
Spooky, spooky.
Oh, it's me. Daddy, why is Mummy always so mean to me? Deciding it's finally time to tell him the truth. She's upset that you survived the childbirth and she didn't.
Oh. I woke up as I felt a hand covering my mouth, stopping me from breathing. And as I began to pass out, I heard the voice whisper, Finally, I have you all to myself.
Eee.
The world ending in 2012 wasn't a prophecy. It was a suggestion. We should have listened, but now he's here. Mothman!
Mothman?
Mothman!
They say smiling in front of a mirror makes you happier. I wish my reflection would join along.
Ah, what a mean bitch.
I've been like... reflection's like, we've got nothing to smile about. No fucking lies to yourself.
Reflection's like, don't tell me to smile.
I've been like that scene from Legend where he's there like, oh my God. Fucking smile!
Stacey, my next one. Still in my bathroom, I have been staring at my reflection for 14 hours now. But each time I look away, it tries to climb out of the mirror.
I just break the mirror.
Oh, that's
fuck you,
trim. That's a good one.
I awoke to find a note next to me on my pillow that read, I saw you had a nightmare again last night. Don't worry, I'll always watch over you while you sleep.
You know who that was?
Mothman.
Punctuality has never been my strong suit. As I sit here and watch the last ship leave for the new Earth, I wish it was.
Oh dear.
Oh.
That is a very me story, though.
Ah, Felicia.
Same.
Do you see now? There's nothing to be afraid of, my mum said as she emerged from my wardrobe. Yes, Mummy, I lied, as I noticed the mole on the right side of her face was now on the left.
Oh.
It's a monster in there rearranging your moles.
I sold my car and my house to pay the 500,000 ransom. Now please let me speak to my wife. The sound of my wife's laughter was the last thing I heard before the line went dead.
At the start of the flight, the captain announced this would be the last flight of his career. At first, I thought it was a wholesome way to announce his retirement, until the engines cut out and the plane began to nosedive.
He worked for Boeing.
He did.
After I asked the crystal ball to tell me how to escape death, I was really confused as it read, "No thanks, honey, I'm full." However, something clicked in my head when my husband offered me cake after dinner. Plum pudding! Aquatabon.
I wondered where that one was going. That was such a good one.
Oh, yeah.
I live in a world where you can only speak 500 words a day. I only had 5 left and needed to convince the guy holding the gun not to shoot.
Wanna just be, oi, stop it. Done. Oh, try me, bitch.
Nay guns, prick!
Right, fuck around and find out.
There you go. I was on a video call when I dropped my phone on the floor. As I picked it up, my husband's face had changed. He held his hand to his lips as if to say to be quiet, and to my horror, typed out a message that read, "There's a man under the bed."
My daughter Sadie was a kind, loving girl, and we just want her returned safely. Please, I plead. Sadie is, I corrected myself in the mirror.
Ooh. I think I might be the most successful serial killer in history. The best part is telling their loved ones we did everything we could.
I decided to stop stalking the woman I'd had a crush on for the past 6 months after I found hundreds of pictures of me sleeping hung up on the inside of my wardrobe. Of her wardrobe.
I thought you was like, I just took all these pictures of me, I look so cute.
I totally ruined that one. That's like a double-ended psychopath love story.
That's a Joe and Love story.
I was going to say, Joe and Love. As I turn off the light, I begin walking back upstairs. I thought I had finally confronted my childhood fears until I felt something grab my ankle and pull me back into the darkness of the basement.
Aww.
It wasn't even worth it. That one was
spooky.
Like, okay.
I begged them to turn off the machines that kept me alive due to the constant, unbearable pain I was in. The warden laughed and reminded me I still have 200 years left to serve.
Oh,
suck.
That is brutal.
What did he do?
I have a 200 years, at least 200 year sentence, and use machines to keep him alive.
200 year life sentence?
Mm-hmm.
They should do that to paedophiles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of...
No!
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 Sasha?
Yesterday, I figured out how my curse worked. Apparently, only people in danger can hear what I've wrote.
They didn't understand how she'd died, as she'd been bitten loads of times and was immune to the virus. However, during her autopsy, they discovered that the fetus inside her was not.
Oh, dear.
Oh, what a way to go.
I know. Spontaneous combustion.
Gives you a whole new meaning, new meaning to being eaten out.
And on that note, guys.
Thanks for joining us, as always. Try to keep it sensible. It never stays sensible for long.
No.
So, yeah, again, thanks for listening. Go back and listen to some more. We've got lots of other episodes of Eerie Theories. go back and listen to some Illuminate Me, the last episode we referenced a couple of times in this with Tasha and her plum puddings. So definitely worth going back and ever listen to that. And other than that, I think it's time to say goodbye so we can all go to bed, because it is stupidly late right now. Bye, guys.